really unprecedented in the state, and we believe that the public should have more say about these kinds of policies.
The State Game Board considers changing bear snaring rules. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, March 25th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Anchorage women are honored by the Athena Society.
Strength is in your friends, your mentors, your coworkers, and so for me, that's a big one.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. The University of Alaska now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. A fisheries degree prepares you for a career in fisheries biology, management, business, or policy, and more. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
An order of priests has agreed to pay $166.1 million to hundreds of Native Americans and Alaska Natives who were abused as children at the order's schools around the Pacific Northwest. The settlement between more than 450 victims and the Oregon province of the Society of Jesus is one of the largest in the Catholic Church's sweeping sex abuse scandal. It also calls for a written apology to the victims. The province previously settled another 200 claims, then it filed for bankruptcy, claiming the payments depleted its treasury. But victims argued the province remained wealthy because it controls and owns several schools and properties. The relationship between the Jesuit order and other Jesuit properties, including Gonzaga University, has been an issue in bankruptcy proceedings. But both the college and the province maintain they are separate entities. The State Game Board begins its meeting on South Central hunting issues tomorrow in Anchorage. Proposals changing rules on bear snaring in a game management unit near Tionic and Beluga have raised concerns among some conservation groups, like Anchorage-based Alaska Center for the Environment. Valerie Connor is ACE's conservation director. She says there's a disturbing trend among upcoming proposals.
Or many of which are concentrated on how to eliminate or remove substantial numbers of predators in the hopes that it will elevate the populations of moose and caribou around the state. The board has taken some pretty radical measures to go down this road, and one of them that we're really concerned about is the whole bear baiting issue that's never been allowed in the state of Alaska before.
Until recently, bear snaring was illegal in Alaska, but last year, a tightly controlled experimental program in Game Unit 16B allowed limited snaring of black bears.
And, you know, there was incidental catches of brown bear, and they did, you know, they were able to kill quite a number of black bear as well. And then I think just from feeling that success that, oh, this is a great way to kill bears, that that has led them to open up the 16B to brown bear snaring now. So that really concerns us. It's really unprecedented in the state, and we believe that the public should have more say about these kinds of policies.
Connor says the public has not had adequate notice of the proposals. Tony Cavalock with Fish and Games Division of Wildlife Conservation in Anchorage says bear snaring is aimed at reducing the numbers of bear which feed on moose calves. He says 85% of the calves are lost within the first 90 days of life.
We have a very high density bear population in Unit 16. In fact, recent calculations by our statisticians show that we have upwards of 3,000 bears in the unit, and we still don't have 6,000 moose on our latest count. So that indicates we have essentially, for round averages, one bear for every two moose on the ground there, and that's just black bears. It doesn't include the 750-plus brown bears and the wolves we have in the area. So it's pretty tough for a moose to survive out there.
Public testimony before the game board is set for tomorrow through Sunday. The Fairbanks militia members who are accused of planning to kill government officials now have trial dates set for May. The defendants face both federal and state charges. At a hearing yesterday, Lonnie and Karen Vernon of Salcha were scheduled to go to trial May 16th on charges of threatening to kill a federal judge and an IRS agent. Lonnie Vernon, Schaefer Cox of Fairbanks, and Coleman Barney of North Pole were scheduled to stand trial May 23rd on federal weapons charges. The four and Michael Anderson face trial May 30th on a variety of state charges. This week, the Anchorage Athena Society inducted 9 women and honored one more with an award. The goal is to encourage women to continue doing good things for others and for their community. KMBA's Jacqueline Estes has more.
The Athena Society's purpose is to encourage women in community service for business excellence and for mentoring other women in business. Republican U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski was one of the keynote speakers at the luncheon honoring 10 women.
Believe in what you have to offer. Believe in the courage of your convictions. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, but at the end of the night, you know that you will have slept well, knowing that you stood up for those that you love and what you care about.
One of the Athena inductees is Maver Carey, president and CEO of the Kuskokwim Corporation, which has tripled its revenues in the past few years under her leadership. Carey says a strong support network helped.
In the political realm of the Alaska Native Village Society, we also work in the realm of politics in the state and then within D.C. And politics are not easy. It's often hard to get in that rut and try to continue to do what's in your heart. And strength is in your friends, your mentors, your coworkers, and so for me, that's a big one.
The 2011 Anchorage Athena Award went to Jane Angvik. Introducing her, former Athena Award recipient Heather Flynn said Angvik is courageous, repeatedly testifying on issues involving women, children, and social justice. Angvik has served on the Anchorage Assembly and run for statewide office. She has worked in executive positions for several state agencies, as well as for Alaska Native and women's organizations. Angvik says speaking out changes the character of a community.
We are all enhanced by the hands across the waters that we use in our lives, and we make a difference when we give back. The business community in Anchorage, Alaska, and the Athena Society has been giving back for a very long time. And we are called to serve. And so I'm very grateful.
About 600 people attended the awards luncheon. In Anchorage, I'm Jacqueline Estes.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, 3 fox in YK Delta have tested positive for rabies.
For humans or any mammal, once you start showing symptoms of rabies, there's no way to cure it. So once you start showing symptoms, you're pretty much dead.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo. For over 54 years, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come. The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2011 PFD and consider sharing a portion with your favorite charity through Pick, Click, Give. More information at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
As spring advances across Alaska, forecasters are looking at factors that will determine the severity of this year's breakup. National Weather Service River Forecast Center hydrologist Scott Lindsay says at this point, there's a higher than normal chance of flooding in many areas. Lindsay says the big November warm-up and rainstorm that hit the western and central interior hard could result in river ice problems this spring.
With the levels being higher than normal when it refroze, you've got a much larger proportion of the width of the river that's actually got an ice sheet on it, and there's just less room for it to move and break up.
Lindsay says the unusual Thanksgiving weather also resulted in a bunch of jumble ice stacking up on the lower portions of the Kuskokwim and Tanana rivers.
We've heard reports that there's a jumble ice down below Manly Hot Springs.
Another factor which affects breakup snowpack has been normal or below normal in most areas except in northwest Alaska, where the snowfall was well above average. Lindsay says the biggest breakup factor is weather over the next month. He says if it stays cool and then rapidly warms, ice jams and flooding are likely as a surge of meltwater hits relatively strong river ice. An international expert says a southeast Alaska mineral deposit could become one of the nation's most important rare earth element mines. Owners of the Bokan Mountain site say they're proceeding in hopes of developing an area that once held a uranium mine. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld has more.
Jack Lifton helps large industries find metals for high technology products. He's also a senior fellow at the Institute for the Analysis of Global Security, which focuses on energy issues. He had a message for the recent Alaska Miners Association annual convention in Juneau.
You're sitting on a real gold mine in this state, and that gold mine is a rare earth mine.
Lifton and his Illinois-based company, Technology Metals Research, monitor the search for rare earths. They're used in cell phones, car engines, computer hard drives, and even compact fluorescent lights. He showed the conference a chart of potential mine sites. The top American prospect is on the southern end of southeast Alaska's Prince of Wales Island.
United States, if it's going to be self-sufficient in rare earth metals, must develop the deposits which have been discovered in the Bokan Mountain, Alaska area. There isn't any other choice.
Self-sufficiency is important because China mines and produces most rare earths, and it substantially reduced exports. Ucore Rare Metals has been exploring the Bokan Mountain site for several years. The Canadian company's Mike Power says it spent a lot of time and money to find out what's there.
To date, the company's completed 78 holes for a total of 8,500 meters. They've also excavated 45 hand trenches and channel samples across the zone, mapped 25 individual vein systems.
Ucore recently released an independent resource estimate prepared by Aurora Geosciences of Yellowknife Northwest Territories. The report recommends further exploration and associated efforts.
Although there is no economic deposit at this point, we firmly believe that this will eventually be mined, and we want to pursue a parallel track to development. So engineering studies have begun, and also, very important, of course, environmental investigations and permitting, without which nothing can happen.
While it's several years off, backers say a Bokan Mountain mine could provide needed jobs in a depressed area of the state. And Lifton says rare earths refining, now only done in China, could get a stronghold nearby.
There's no mystery to developing the technology to take those rare earths in Ketchikan and have a truck or a boat leave Ketchikan with rare earth magnets in it. It's just about time and effort and capital.
Any mining attracts scrutiny. Developing an area with an old uranium mine raises extra concerns. The Southeast Alaska Conservation Council points to radioactive contamination in a nearby salmon stream and bay. It's from the Ross Adams mine, which closed 40 years ago. SEAC wants a cleanup plan for those problems, as well as restrictions on further pollution as part of any new mine. Ucore, the developer, says it will meet terms of environmental regulations. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
Lawmakers took another step toward banning synthetic cannabinoids on Friday by sending a modified version of the ban out of the Alaska Senate Judiciary Committee. The bill was changed so that a person could be charged with a felony for possessing 12 grams or more of the marijuana-like substance and with a misdemeanor for possessing less than that amount. It also specifies that the substance is illegal only if sprayed on an organic material. House Bill 7 will now be considered by the Finance Committee.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
AT&T. Rethink possible. Details at att.com/Alaska or 1-800-252-7266.
If you are an individual owner of Indian Trust land, an IIM account holder, or heir to an Indian Trust landowner or account holder, you may be eligible to receive money from a $3.4 billion federal settlement. To get a detailed written notice about the settlement that explains your legal rights, you may visit IndianTrust.com or call 1-800-961-6109. This message is sponsored by the Native American Trust.
The Alaska House Special Committee on Energy this week moved forward a resolution opposing the Forest Service roadless rule because it could restrict hydroelectric development on national forest land in Alaska. KFSK's Matt Lichtenstein reports.
Ketchikan Republican Kyle Johansson proposed the resolution, which urges the federal government not to implement roadless rule protections or, quote, otherwise restrict the development of necessary hydroelectric projects in the Tongass National Forest and the Chugach National Forest. According to Johansson, the resolution is partly aimed at clearing up what he saw as gray areas for projects in roadless portions of the forest. For instance, Johansson said Ketchikan's Whitman Lake project was already permitted under the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission process, but he said federal officials have yet to clarify what impact the roadless rule will have on projects already permitted by FERC.
You would assume that it would be okay. You would assume that we would be fine, but we don't know yet. So hopefully by putting this resolution through the system, perking some ears up between today and the time it gets passed out of the Senate, we will have on the record some sort of indication as to how these projects will be treated. As well as projects that haven't even started yet. We're, of course, assuming that they will be fully covered by this rule. But we're really trying to flesh out how this affects projects that are already permitted or ones that are already in the permitting process.
Federal Judge John Sedgwick reinstated the roadless rule on the Tongass this month when he threw out an exemption that had prevented implementation of the 10-year-old conservation law here. His decision was the result of a 2009 lawsuit filed by Cakes Tribal Government as well as conservation and visitor industry groups. Despite the exemption, there were roadless restrictions on the Tongass prior to this month's court ruling. Since May of 2009, Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack issued a memorandum assuming decision-making authority for proposed law logging or road building in roadless areas while, quote, long-term roadless policy is developed and relevant court cases move forward. Local officials say that redelegation of authority to Washington, D.C. has caused problems for the community of Sitka, which is trying to expand its Blue Lake Hydro project to meet electrical needs. The project involves cutting trees in a roadless area, which requires secretarial approval. According to Sitka Electric Utility Director Chris Bruton, that's delayed the FERC process. Bruton testified that time was of the essence for the project. Not only has Sitka reached its hydroelectric capacity, but Bruton testified that 90% of Sitka voters approved bonding for the project and the community issued the bonds in November.
The problem is those bonds have a 3-year requirement to begin construction. We have a very short window for construction to minimize our diesel operations. We anticipate FERC taking a year to get our license done once they start work on it. So we are simply bumping up against a serious time frame about meeting our bond covenants and our bond requirements, and we can't afford to wait on the Forest Service to do this issue. It's a critical issue for our community, and we are extremely frustrated with the whole ordeal, if you will.
While the Secretary of Agriculture currently retains roadless decision-making authority, that's not required under the roadless rule itself. The rule generally prohibits road building and logging in inventoried roadless areas of forests across the country. However, it does specifically allow for some exceptions, like federally funded roads between communities and utility corridors. Tom Waldo is an attorney for Earth Justice, which represented the plaintiffs in the Tongass roadless lawsuit. Waldo was not at this week's legislative hearing, but he says the resolution reflects a basic misunderstanding of the roadless rule.
The roadless rule does not require secretarial approval for hydro projects. The secretary approval requirement is a temporary measure resulting from a lawsuit filed by the state of Wyoming that has created uncertainty about roadless area projects around the country. That case has been pending on appeal for over a year now, and we expect a decision soon that should clear up the uncertainty and get rid of that secretarial approval requirement.
Waldo says the roadless rule itself does not prohibit hydroelectric projects. He says supporters of the roadless rule in Southeast Alaska also support what he calls fish-friendly hydro development. However, the Forest Service has remained relatively mum on how it sees roadless affecting hydro or other developments on the Tongass. The agency has repeatedly said it's still looking into the issue since the court ruling. No one from the Forest Service spoke at the legislative hearing. Without objection, the Special Committee on Energy moved the resolution forward. It next goes to House Resources. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
Three fox in the YK Delta tested positive for rabies recently. From KYUK in Bethel, Angela Denning Barnes has more.
The Office of Environmental Health at the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation will not say which villages the fox were in because of confidentiality.
And also, you know, at this time of year, it's present in the YK Delta. Mm-hmm. So to narrow it down to one community kind of takes away from some of the goal of having everybody aware.
Brian Barabay is an environmental health officer with YKHC. He says rabid fox are found almost every year in the YK Delta, but this time is a little different because no humans were bitten. Oftentimes, OEHC's rabies cases go like this. A rabid fox loses its fear, enters a village, bites a dog, and then that dog bites a human. But in these three cases, only one dog was bitten. Barabay says locals acted quickly, killed the animals, and sent them in for testing. He says the bottom line is to catch the rabies before symptoms show up.
For humans or any mammal, once you start showing symptoms of rabies, there's no way to cure it. So once you start showing symptoms, you're pretty much dead.
Barabay says on average, their office can get 5 to 10 dog bite cases every week, especially in the summertime when kids are playing outside. They're not all rabies cases, but the office investigates them all as if they could be, because rabies is fatal if not treated. Treatment involves a series of shots. Barabay says in the usual case of a dog bite, the dog has already been killed. At that point, testing the animal's head for rabies can prevent people from needing rabies shots.
One of the main important things that we run into a lot is someone's dog will bite a kid, let's say, you know, realize the dog's a danger and kill the dog. So unless we can get the animal or the animal stays alive for 10 days, it's the safest thing to do is to assume that the person has been exposed. So we'll get a couple people a year that probably unnecessarily have to get shots just because the kind of chain of command wasn't followed correctly.
That chain of command includes contacting local law enforcement, who contacts YKHC, who conducts an investigation. They receive the animal's body or head in Bethel and then send it on to Fairbanks for testing. The total turnaround only takes 1 or 2 days. Barabay says the timing of these three cases in early spring is considered normal. That's when food sources are low and fox tend to eat the same large decomposing animals, which can spread disease. That's also why it's more common to find rabid fox along the coast, because food is harder to find there. YKHC's OEH office responds to a village that has had a rabid fox by vaccinating all the dogs there. Barabay says they are always looking to train lay vaccinators as well. In Bethel, I'm Angela Denning Barnes.
Basketball is king in rural Alaska, and nowhere is that more evident than Juneau's annual gold medal tournament, now in its 65th year. Organized by the Juneau Lions Club, the annual spring break competition brings together teams from all over Southeast, from Metlakatla in the south to Haines in the north. Over the years, intense rivalries have formed between communities. But behind those rivalries, the players have genuine respect for each other. KTOO's Casey Kelly reports.
Ask a gold medal old-timer who some of the best players in tournament history are, and you're likely to get a rapid-fire response.
Guys like Scudero and Stegan, my brother Mike.
That's Jim Jensen from Yakutat, who's playing in his 41st gold medal tournament. And in case you missed it, the guys he mentioned were Jerry Scudero from Metlakatla, Greg Stegan from Haines, and Mike Jensen from Yakutat. All three have been inducted into the Gold Medal Hall of Fame, and for tournament fans, they might as well be Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, and Larry Bird.
The only time we get to see a lot of these guys is here at Gold Medal. It's just a great tournament. I think it's the best in Alaska.
Years ago, State Senator Albert Kukesh from Angoon was quoted as saying, "Muslims go to Mecca, Tlingits to Gold Medal." A 1993 inductee into the Gold Medal Hall of Fame, Kukesh played in the tournament for 29 years. Bad knees forced him to give up basketball a few years ago, a result, he jokes, of too much dunking the ball when he was a kid. But he still tries to go to as many gold medal games as he can.
People yelling, "Huna, huna, huna," or, you know, "Angoon," or "cake." I mean, just enthusiasm. I've gone to a lot of tournaments in my life, but you don't see the enthusiasm in the hall where you're almost rocking the gymnasium off of its foundation when people get excited.
Kukesh says his favorite tournament was 1983 when Angoon beat Klukwan to win its first championship. At the time, he says it was unusual for two village teams to make it to the championship game, which was usually dominated by larger communities like Juneau and Sitka.
We just had a group of young guys from our village, and everything just clicked, and we shot good, and we played good defense, and everything just worked.
He says what he enjoyed most about playing in the tournament, and misses most now, is the competition.
The rivalry is intense. You know, you don't want to get beat by Yakutat if you're from Angoon, or you don't want to get beat by Huna if you're from Cake.
No.
Rebound!
Of course, all good sports rivalries need crazy fans.
I'm just rooting the crowd right now. Go Yakutat!
Tracy Turnbull of Juneau has been to more than a dozen gold medal tournaments and says it has the best sports atmosphere in Alaska.
It brings people from, you know, all over Southeast Alaska and families from different communities and friends. You know, people play basketball together, high school, and, you know, they just continue to play with each other and against each other.
Championship games for this year's tournament will be played over the weekend. And Yakutat's Jim Jensen says it may very well be his last gold medal. He's not getting any younger, and after 41 years, it's harder to get up and down the court. Then again,
I threatened to quit last year because it's just too hard on my body, but they start practicing, I show up, you know.
21 teams in three different brackets are playing in this year's gold medal tournament. Proceeds from ticket and merchandise sales go to the Juneau Lions Club's scholarship program, as well as local charities. Each team also gets a little travel money. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
Championship games start at 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. All games are played in the Juneau Douglas High School gym. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ellen Lockyer and Jacqueline Estes in Anchorage, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Ed Schoenfeld and Casey Kelly in Juneau, Matt Lichtenstein in Petersburg, and Angela Denning Barnes in Bethel. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, and I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alaska Business Monthly Magazine, publishing statewide news for over 26 years from Alaska's business sector, government, and industries. Information and subscription online at akbizmag.com.
And by the Alaska Budget Report, providing in-depth coverage for state government since 1991, on the web at akbudgetreport.com.
What does an Athabascan artist, the teenage creator of a statewide energy campaign, and a National Geographic photographer have in common? A passion for Alaska and a Conservation Achievement Award from the Alaska Conservation Foundation. Nominate someone you know who's working to ensure a healthy Alaska for an ACF Conservation Achievement Award. Information available online at alaskaconservation.org. The deadline is March 31st. This message sponsored by the Alaska Conservation Foundation. No other port in Alaska is building a 100 rail car loop like the one going in at Port McKenzie. Exporting natural resources from rail to ship will be more efficient than ever. A single limestone deposit in the interior could mean a cement industry in Alaska. Port McKenzie Rail, hundreds of millions in state revenues, thousands of jobs. This message sponsored by the Matanuska-Susitna Borough.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.